From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 13th day of November, 2020. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzlow. He's at GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. And we'll take the weather forecast up to that with Nutrien Ag Solution and Agribull's Eric Snodgrass, and we'll do that right here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. It comes to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Find us online. Listen to us on demand anytime you'd like at willag.org at willag.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
December corn on this Friday at $4.105, settled up 2.25 for the day. The March at $4.19.5, 1.25 higher. And May corn up a penny at $4.24. July, $4.26.25, up 1. And December of next year at $4.04.5, up 2 cents. And November futures in Chicago for the soybeans, $11.41.5, the settlement price. 4.5 higher. January up 2.5 at $11.48. March beans $11.48 a bushel, up 3.25. And next year's November $10.40.25, 9 cents higher on the day. The bean oil up 8 cents at $37.13. The bean meal unchanged today at $388.10. Wheat futures soft red July 4.5 higher at $6.02.25. The hard red July at $5.70.75. Up 7.75 on the afternoon. Live cattle futures in Chicago finished the nearby December $2 and a nickel lower at $109.92.5. February at $112.22.5, $2.57.5 lower. And feeder cattle down 260 at $137.47.5. In the November, January at $137.87.5, down $2.85. Lean hogs 90 cents lower per 100 pounds at $64.90. Crude oil futures at $40.29 a barrel, about 83 cents lower. Ethanol futures down 3 cents at $1.48. And heating oil or diesel fuel at $1.20 0.1 cents a gallon. That's around 2.5 cents lower for the afternoon. The wholesale price of gasoline on the RBOB at $1.12.08, down 2.9 cents for the day. We're now joined by Mike Zuzlow at GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. Hey, good afternoon to you. Thank you so much for being with us, Mike.
Hello, Todd. Happy Friday, sir.
And thanks for doing Commodity Week yesterday, too. We appreciate that.
Yeah, I think it'll work well with what has happened here at the end of this week as far as what to look forward to heading into next week.
What are the four or five top things you've been watching?
You know, the biggest thing I think is the fact that the WASDE numbers and the weather kept the corn and bean bulls in charge, but you also noticed that the beans could not once again break through with follow through buying 2 or 3 days in a row because of the wheat market. And I think that wheat continues to be the driver of the overall sentiment in this trade as far as whether we're really going to continue to trend higher. Fortunately, Friday, we had a rejection of lower levels in the hard red wheat. We tested major support of around that 535 area within 2 cents of that. And that was a big number because soft red wheat had already broken through to new monthly lows on Thursday's session. So with the hard red wheat turning around on Friday, it really came in and helped secure the soft red wheat to get it back up above 590. Looks like it's going to close around 592-ish. That's a really good number to close above because that's just above key support. So it keeps the bulls in charge because the USDA gave us such a good, strong drop in carryover thanks to the yield declines and thanks to the corn export increases. We also saw in the weekly export sales reports where the beans continue to really outperform everything else. So I think the beans still want to go up. I think the biggest problem I have right now is the South American weather is going to look like it's going to be changing here the second half of November. So keep your eye on the wheat. If the wheat and the corn support the beans, the beans can go on higher, I think. But I would think that maybe the December-January time period is a better time period for the beans to really start to kick it into a higher gear if the South American weather disappoints.
So if the wheat is the linchpin at this point, it's stalled at this time because the North American crop going into dormancy, well, Northern Hemisphere crop going into dormancy, and the South American crop waiting on a change in the weather, I guess.
Yeah, except that when I looked at all of the wettest areas of the world the next 14 days and the driest areas of the world the next 14 days, Entre Rios, Argentina, key areas of Russia, Donetsk, Ukraine, Odessa, Ukraine, and Hutchinson, Kansas were all on the list of the driest areas over the next 14 days. So I think we may be under a scenario, if the dollar doesn't start to go higher, we have a scenario where the hard red wheat firms up, helps the soft red wheat, and then all of a sudden the Black Sea market comes online and it starts to go higher. One of the most interesting things that happened on Friday was Turkey tendering for 350,000 tons of corn with a deadline on the offers of November 24th. So they essentially want it and get it to get it booked right away. And this is Turkey, of all places, wanting corn. So I think it shows you that maybe the wheat supplies in the European areas and the Baltic areas are tighter than what we've been used to. And now all of a sudden we're gone after corn, which is quite a bit cheaper than the wheat on a global basis.
Is wheat the leader in this marketplace, in your opinion?
Yeah, I think it really is, Todd. I think the beans, as I said, the beans can't do it alone at this point. And I think we really do have to assume that we're rationing some bean demand unless we continue to keep South American weather on the droughty side, because we're not at 850 anymore. We're at 1150. And that's going to ration demand in that second half of the marketing year, in my opinion. And we really do have some eager sellers in Brazil wanting to sell, 133 to 136 million metric ton crops. So I think what we have to start thinking about is the idea, is there going to be a shortage globally for soybeans, kind of like is there going to be a shortage globally for wheat? And I think the trade's getting a little bit nervous there's going to be a shortage globally for soybeans, and I'm not at that point yet.
You didn't say shortage globally for corn. What do you think on that front?
I think we're already there, and I think the nicest thing about it, we talk about this quite a bit on the Commodity Week, is by far the corn is the cheapest in the United States around the world versus our major competitors. We're trading about $187 a ton at the Gulf, and all of our major competitors are anywhere from $230 to $240 a ton. And this is really good news because there's less and less competition out there. So as Kurt and I kind of bantered back and forth on Commodity Week, and Garrett, I think, also was talking about it, we've got a situation where the corn demand really looks strong. And if we don't see this COVID spike eat into the ethanol and the feed sector, I think corn definitely has, I shouldn't say definitely, corn most likely has the strongest demand set of cards to be able to play this next 6 months or the rest of this marketing year.
Always good to talk to you on a Friday afternoon. Thank you, my friend.
You too, my friend. Take care.
It's Mike Suzalo. He's with GlobalComResearch.com. Out of Atchison, Kansas, joined us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. You probably started wondering at some point this week what USDA might look like under a Biden administration. Philip Karsten is the former administrator of USDA's Foreign Ag Service under President Obama, as well as the former interim president of the World Food Program. He spoke to the Ag Business Council of Kansas City during a recent webinar and talked about the transition team already in place that's looking at USDA.
Biden said a lot of times during the campaign that he was running as a Democrat, but he would govern for everyone. And at USDA, I think that has manifested itself in one of his first moves in appointing an incredibly level-headed, pragmatic, science and data-driven transition team. Robert Bonney will be leading that effort. Robert and I were colleagues in 2013 through 17. I was at FAS. He was head of the mission area with responsibility for the Natural Resource Conservation Service and the Forest Service, which is a load of employees and a lot of thorny issues to deal with. The thing that would characterize Robert is that he's a bridge builder.
Karsten is currently a senior policy advisor for a law firm in Washington, D.C. He says Robert Bonney brings real-world agriculture experience to USDA and the transition team.
The transition team will be sorting through a lot of personnel and management issues in the weeks ahead, and they will also be on the receiving end of a whole lot of advice in the form of white papers from every topical corner of the nation, from food and energy to climate and production agriculture. One of the papers worth noting that was released is something called the Climate 21 Project that you all can Google. I think it's a very worthwhile read, and it was co-authored by Robert Bonney.
Now, Robert Bonney was the USDA Undersecretary for for Natural Resources and Environment during the Obama administration. He's currently a part of Duke University's Nicholas Institute for Environmental Policy Solutions. Well, it's time to sign up for the Illinois Farm Economics Summit. That's the conference the Ag Economist hosts each and every December. Normally, we travel around the state. Of course, that's not going to happen this year. We'll do them online, but not just one of them. There will be five of them, although they'll only be an hour long each, starting December the 1st. That's a Tuesday. We'll do five different topics for the Illinois Farm Economic Summit. You only have to sign up once, and you can do that on the Farm Doc Daily website. And guess what? It's free this year. That's right. You can do it online. It's free. Sign up right now at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Look under webinar/IFAS for 2020 virtual IFAS. We'll kick off on Tuesday, the first day of December, with our market outlook for corn and soybeans, and follow that up on Friday of that week with the grain farm income outlook and risk and rental implications for acreage across not only Illinois, but the Midwest. The next week on Tuesday, crop insurance and farm programs, and we'll follow up with farm policy sessions on Friday, and we'll wrap things up on Tuesday, December the 15th, with our fifth Illinois Farm Economic Summit webinar, an hour on the farmland markets. I hope you can join us. I'll be there for each of those five events. Again, that's the Illinois Farm Economic Summits. They're going online this year, so we will not be traveling the state. We didn't want to put them all in one morning, so they'll be on Tuesdays and Fridays starting December the 1st at 11 a.m. You only have to sign up once, and you'll be invited to all five webinars. And best of all, it's free this year. Sign up today at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Look for webinars/IFAS at the top of the page, and then 2020 virtual IFAS in that tab. On this Friday afternoon, Eric Snodgrass is here. He's with Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible. Good afternoon to you, Eric. Thanks for being with us today. What a gorgeous day it is.
Yeah, you know, it's a little cooler than it was, but, you know, I don't think anybody's going to complain to see a lot of sunshine as we start to work our way into these cooler months.
Hey, I want to call it No Rain November, but I don't think that's actually going to be the case. maybe new old weather November.
I don't know what's
going to happen over the next couple of weeks here.
Yeah, so we're going into a time period here where our temperatures, while still mild, you know, compared to average, are not going to be nearly as warm as they were for the last week. So we really cranked up our temperatures. In fact, some places in the Midwest and in the Central Plains had the warmest start to November on record, and those records go back, 1893. So this was pretty impressive warm up. Well, it's not as though it's going to be cool or cold like it was a year ago, but it is certainly going to be more of that normal kind of range, which is going to be good because we got a system coming through this weekend. It's right now coming into the Pacific Northwest, and it's a monster in the Northwest. I'm like 3 to 4 feet of snow in the Cascade Mountains. Well, it's going to then reinvigorate over the Great Lakes over the weekend. And as it then pulls through the Great Lakes, we're going to be dealing primarily with rain chances tomorrow into tomorrow afternoon and evening. Won't be everybody getting rain, but there will be a front coming through. Now, here's the problem with this system. It is going to be extremely windy, both out ahead of it as the front comes through and then behind it. And after it does finally make its way through, we got a good stretch of days where the temperatures are going to be moderated, and we're going to have decent soil conditions because of the recent rain. And much of next week is relatively dry. So I think that next week is going to be a prime week for a lot of farm fall applications here as we work our way into the, you know, this part of November.
No, well, that sounds really good. Now, while we were short of rainfall, especially in parts of central Illinois for a while, if you turn your attention to the southeast, that's not really been the case. What's happening there?
Yeah, you know, you're right, though. First, about Illinois, you know, right over in our area, I looked at the moisture percentile or the profile percentile going down to 3 feet, and we were sitting at about 2%. So it was bone dry there, and even the rain that came through recently soaked in pretty quickly. But in the southeast, so some places, if you kind of just enclose the southeast, saying everything south of the Ohio River and east of the Mississippi. That's a big area. Many of those locations are having their wettest year on record. Okay, so when we think about that, what just happened over the weekend, or no, over this week, excuse me, was we had what was left of Hurricane Eta, and then we had a stalled out frontal boundary. And I was looking at a map here, looking at just the last 3 days of total accumulated precipitation. And there's broad swaths of South Carolina, North Carolina, Virginia that just got 6 to 8 inches of rainfall. I mean, in 3 days. And so it is just bad in the southeast right now with too much rain.
Wow. Is there relief on the way there? What do tropical depressions look like?
Yeah, well, we just had a new one formed this morning here on Friday. Tropical Depression 31. By almost every model forecast and what the National Hurricane Center is suggesting is that it'll become a hurricane, which it'll get the next name in the lineup of names, which would be Iota. So that would give us 30 named systems this year. The good news is this system's down in the Caribbean and it's heading towards Central America. The bad news is that's exactly where Hurricane Eta, 8 or 10 days ago, produced massive flooding in parts of like Nicaragua and countries right there in Central America. So that's bad news for them. But the chances of that one making the northward turn at this point, I don't have strong evidence to say that it would, which could mean that we could finally say that we're done with the hurricanes hitting the U.S., but 2020 has been about as predictable as, you know, the least predictable thing I've ever tried to predict. How about that?
Well, how about we do one more prediction into 2020, 2021 winter season? Have you thought more about the long term here in the United States? And then we'll turn our attention to South America.
Yeah, I have. And got some supporting, you know, evidence from the models that maybe our initial thoughts are going to pan out a little bit. If we're going to split the country, it's going to be split north-south. And what I'm talking about here is that we had new model data come in from the European, from the National Multimodel Ensemble, even from the Japanese. And when we look at all of them put together, tends to favor more of a northerly storm track, so cooler along the northern tier of the U.S., good snows for the northwest, could have a branch of the subtropical jet stream that cuts through the Ohio River Valley. So we could get, you know, decent moisture here during the winter, which would be good. No winter drought development. I don't see any, at least. But across the south, more or less warm and dry pattern. So I'm concerned from the southern half of California through Texas over to the Carolinas that winter could be dry and warm. And that's just something we have to watch to see if it evolves. Because if it does, it could mean a spring drought situation that could be something that would be important for our summer forecasts.
Indeed. And then in South America, what are your conditions there?
Well, a couple of interesting things are happening right now. The MJO was on the move and it is now just given up. And as it gives up, it's going to give up in what we call phase two. Now, phase two tends to be supportive of a lot of precipitation over the Amazon, but it also means that parts of, you know, central, southern Brazil and Argentina, while it's not bone dry, are going to favor drier conditions. And just remember, we're moving into the time period for like Mato Grosso, that region in Brazil, that a normal week's worth of rainfall is 3 to 5 inches. So if they're only forecast to get, you know, 1 or 2, that could start to dispel overall precipitation deficits that start to build. But coming back to our discussion we've been having now for months about La Nina, if we just let the long-range models kind of give us a hint about this, it would point toward drier conditions throughout December, January, February, the farther south you go. So primarily that's going to be in Argentina. And there's been some dry pockets in Argentina as of late, and it's going to be dry out there for the next 10 days compared to normal. So I believe we're going to have a weather market story out of South America that's going to continue for the foreseeable future. And I think it's going to capture the attention of a lot of folks as things start to shift back and forth, working on those big production numbers that are expected at this point.
Hey, thank you so much for being with us. I'd appreciate it.
Yep, thank you.
That's Eric Snodgrass with Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible. Joined us here on the Closing Market Report on this Friday afternoon.